Now we're going to diverge from our agenda, and we're going to start with item 25. And we have some cards here, I think, for people that may want to speak. Want to read the item?
Item number 25, a resolution ordinance by Supervisors Bowen and Rainey enacting a minimum living wage ordinance for service, concession, lease, and financial assistance agreements publicly funded by Milwaukee County and amending Chapter 32.09 sub 17 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances.
Okay, we do have some speakers. We do have many who have registered in favor. Apparently that stack of cards is just registrations, I've been told. Perhaps as people speak, you can maybe go through and make sure that somebody didn't get missed. We don't want to miss anybody who wants to speak. And I've been handed some cards and been asked to keep these in order. So I will do the best I can to do that. And I would ask that since we'll have Supervisor Bowen speaking at great length later, I would suspect that you limit your comments to 2 minutes. I do have an online stopwatch on my computer. I hope to not have to use it. But we'll start with Jennifer Epps Addison speaking in favor, followed by Kevin Walker speaking in favor. We're going to be able to do this a lot more quickly if we don't have either for or against any sort of outburst, so if you could just keep from clapping a little bit, I'd appreciate it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the County Board, as well as the hundreds of members of the Milwaukee County community who have turned up today to make their voices heard on this incredibly important piece of legislation. My name is Jennifer Epps Addison. I am the Executive Director at Wisconsin Jobs Now. We are a community organization that is one of the 40-plus organizations that are part of the Coalition for a Living Wage. Members of the board, there is a movement afoot in this country. I don't think that I have to tell you that the problems and the challenges we face regarding poverty and economic inequality have never been greater. In fact, the President of the United States himself said that income inequality is the defining moment and the defining challenge of our times. That was echoed by the voice of the Pope Francis, who called on elected officials across the world to realize that there is not an absolute to free markets, and that there is a very important role that elected officials, those who are elected to represent the least among us, play in helping to ensure that everyone in our community has access to economic opportunity. Over the last year, a coalition of 40-plus organizations has been working with County Supervisor David Bowen to fulfill the promise he made while out knocking doors in his district. He told the voters in his district that he wanted to do more, that the county board could do better for the citizens of our community, and today, that piece of legislation, the signature piece of legislation he's introduced, has come to fruit. The coalition has spent time in every single county supervisory district. In front of me, you see more than 11,000 petitions that come from every single one of your districts. In fact, all 18. Every single person on the county board has heard from their constituents on this issue. Hundreds of people have called your office. Thousands more have taken action by signing petitions, and hundreds stand before you today, asking you to do the right thing, asking you to do what is just. Now, there will be naysayers, and there always are, and they're going to say the same things that they always say, that it's going to raise taxes, that it's going to kill jobs. But the reality is far different from the falsities that they spread, the things that they say every time we try to do anything for working people in this country. The reality is that in 140 municipalities across this great nation, not one has shown a correlation between introducing and passing living wage ordinances and an increase in taxes or a decrease in jobs. The reality is that the jobs that we are talking about, the food service workers at our jail, the folks who take care of us at the airport, the people who take care of the sick and elderly in the community, people like my grandmother, who was taken care of by a home care worker. Those folks, those jobs, are not outsourceable. They're not going to move somewhere else. You cannot provide home health care from Illinois. You cannot serve people at the airport from Minnesota. These are jobs that are going to stay in our community. And these taxpayers of our community are demanding more out of the resources and the subsidies that we give to multi-billion dollar corporations. And make no mistake about it. The companies that we are trying to hold accountable, by and large, are multinational corporations that are not headquartered in Wisconsin. It is time to demand more out of the resources that the county board, through its tax dollars, provide to big business. To make sure that every single worker who gets up every day, who does the right thing, who contributes to our community, has a home to go to at night, can take their children to the doctor when they get sick, can afford to keep food in the refrigerator. This is not a radical demand. It is a just demand. It is a demand for a living wage, a wage that is only 10% above the federal poverty line. There are numerous benefits to passing living wage ordinances. Most importantly, it puts money back in the hands of the folks who are going to go out and spend it right away in our local economy. If we want to boost Milwaukee, if we want to create a community and a county that works for everyone, then we have to ensure that the lowest paid workers in our community take home enough that they can live independently without having to rely on public assistance. And so I will close with this, recognizing the decorum of the chair. I will close with this. Now is not the time to be afraid or to be bullied by the same special interests that have tried to downsize and undermine democracy at this county board. That is not why we're here today. Today is the day to stand proud and to stand strong with the thousands of members of this community who recognize the very important role that this board plays in our community. You are not a sound piece or a mouthpiece for the county executive or for the special interests of the business community. You are here to represent the people, and the people of Milwaukee County have spoken loud and clear. They are asking you to be bold. They are asking you to be leaders. They are asking you to lead not just for our county, but for our state and for our country. So I ask you, join the voters in Seattle at SeaTac, who just voted for $15 an hour, much significantly higher than what we're seeking here, minimum wage. Join the voters in New Jersey, who just rose their lifted their minimum wage. Join the 11,000 members of our community who have called on you to address income inequality, and vote yes today, and yes Thursday, and yes from now on into the future for policies that benefit workers in this county and expand economic opportunity into the next generation of county residents. Thank you very much.
Again, if you could keep the helpers down, it would make us move a little bit quicker. Kevin Walker, 7821 North 60th, followed by Venus Brown.
All right,
morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and all supervisors. Just want to introduce myself. My name is Kevin Walker. I work for Orion Security. I do third shift. Secure that out of Milwaukee County mental health. Some of the things that we go through is a very dangerous job. We sometimes to deal with people that have mental illness, drug addiction, alcoholism. Some of them may be getting abused mentally, physically, and from time to time when they come out to the hospital, they may be outraged or trying to attack themselves or her other patients, and sometimes we have to get in the middle of it and try to restrain them. And we are always at the razor where we can get hit, kicked, punched. Sometimes we have feces thrown at us. Sometimes we have objects thrown at us, whereas from cups, chairs, sometimes whatever they can get their hands on. So just to give you an idea of some of the things, you know, we have to deal with from time to time. Some of the problems that I see in Milwaukee is right now the wages are just too low. Some of us can't even afford to put food on our table. You know, we have to decide on if we're going to eat or if, you know, our children's going to eat. So I think if we can pass this law, it will really help us out a lot. How does it affect me? Like I said, I only make $8.50 an hour. Every 2 weeks, after taxes and after child support, I bring home about $525. By the time I pay rent and lights and things that I need, food and stuff like that, that money don't go very far. I can't even afford to stay in an apartment by myself. I have to stay with family and relatives. So that's some of the things that how it affects me. And I also have to work another job to go along with this job. I'm already working 40 hours at night. When I get off from 7 in the morning, I still go to my first job. And sometimes I put in a good 10, 12, almost 13 hours from where I already don't work 8 hours and still go back and do another 8 hours. This is some of the things, you know, I have to go through because I just don't make enough money. I don't mind working. I'm quite sure other people behind me, we don't mind working hard. The only thing we asking is that we be able to just work one job where we can be at home with our families, where we can, you know, put clothes and food and things that we need, be able to buy an automobile, be able to buy a home, where we can, you know, be at home at night, where, you know, we don't have to leave our family. So that's why we're asking you guys if you would just pass this bill to help us, where we can help ourselves.
Thank you.
How I feel you guys can help us is just simply just vote yes. The ones that's, you know, undecided, the ones who haven't quite made up their mind, only thing we ask you is just hear us, hear our voice. Some of you guys asked us to vote you guys in. The only thing we ask you to do is just do what you told us or promised you would do if you got into office. So we're just asking you guys just to step up like we stepping up. Some of us had to take off this morning to come down and talk to you guys. That's the last thing a lot of us need to do is take off from work when we're already struggling. But we know we needed to come down here to talk to you guys. And the only thing...
That's all right.
Only thing we ask you guys to do is just hear our voice. Like I said, we don't mind doing what we got to do to take care of our family. Like I'm quite sure you guys don't mind doing what you got to do to take care of your family. So only thing we ask you to do is just pass this law where we can take care of our family. Where we don't have to be worrying about at night how we're going to take care of our family. A lot of time our kids don't know what we go through because we don't want them to see that. But if you guys pass this law, we won't have to be crying no more. We won't have to be worrying no more. We won't have to be depending on the system or depending on family members. We can depend on ourselves. So I'm just asking you to just hear our voice, hear our face. Now you don't have to listen to your voicemail and wonder who is talking to me. Now you got a face you can put with that voice. And I'm just asking you guys just to listen to us. And just pass this law. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, but today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Next we'll hear from Venus Brown, and then we'll hear from Steve Boz from the MMAC.
Good morning. My name is Venus Brown, I'm a home care worker. I work for Supportive Home Care. I've been a home care worker for 4 years. I'm a mother of two, and I'm a proud member of SEIU. I stand here today to share with you what life is like as a home care worker and a low wages worker. I'm asking for support of the leaders here to come together and pass the living wages. Home care worker wages are very low, and within the 4 years, I work with no benefits, without a raise. I just got an increase within the 4 years. The work can be very challenging. It depends on the assignment. I have dealt with animal hair, bed bugs, animal feces. It wouldn't stop me. I would continue to work and give 100% of quality care to my client.
Yeah.
I would pray daily and ask God to give me the strength so I could go to work, so I could support my family. Even with the small increase, it still wasn't enough to support my family. The school that my two daughters attend required uniforms. These are the low wages I couldn't afford, but one uniform each. My oldest daughter would come home sometime with her pants ripped. My children.
It's all right, baby.
We got your back.
Say it, we got your back.
My children didn't have the best shoes. And sometimes I would have to sew my daughter's pants up. I would have to glue their shoes together. Sometimes the kids notice my daughter's shoes and her clothing. They began to tease her. She got bullied. Her grades dropped. She had a very low self-esteem. As of today, she's a very sad little girl. The school noticed that, and they suggested that she do therapy. Right now, she's in counseling. I will reassure her it would get better. But my seven-year-old daughter would say to me, "Mommy, it's okay, we can wait. I stand here before you, and I say, working people should not have to wait. Hard working people should not have to wait for their needs. We have waited long enough. We are accepting less. Living wages for me would mean that my children would have to feel different because of the clothing that they're wearing. Because of what they're wearing, my husband has a disability. He can focus on being healthy or me worrying about him being hospitalized. Living wages would mean to me I could sit at the dinner table with my family as a family instead of me waiting on my children to finish eating. And whatever's left on their plate, that's what I would eat. I'm not just speaking for me. I'm speaking for every home care worker, every low wages worker. Because of my faith, I never gave up. I will continue to work, to push forward. That's why I'm asking. Asking, I stand here before you to help pass the living wages. Thank you.
Next we'll hear from Steve Boz from the MMAC speaking against, followed by Christine Newman-Ortiz.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. I've submitted...
Could we ask people to at least identify their county of residence? I think it would be helpful.
Sure. We have addresses. I can read the addresses into the record. You want Mr. Boz?
We don't need street addresses, but counties would be helpful.
Okay. Are you asking that of Mr. Boz?
I'm asking that of all some.
Well, the first three, I mean, I don't know. Jennifer Epps Addison is maybe a work address. 7821 North 60th, Mr. Walker, is that your home address?
Yes.
Okay. Venus Brown, 4643 North 38th Street, Venus Brown. That your home address? Okay. So we're on the record with that. Mr. Boz, Supervisor Jerzyk has asked for
I represent the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. We represent businesses in a four-county region, Milwaukee County, Waukesha County, Ozaukee, and Washington County. Our headquarters are here in the city of Milwaukee at 756 North Milwaukee Street. Personally, I live in Brookfield, Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to be patient. I mean, when you're cheering for people, that you're fine. But Mr. Boz has a right to speak, and if he disagrees with you, I ask you give him the same consideration you would want given if you were speaking against a group. So please be respectful. I mean, we could clear the room if we want to, but I think everybody deserves to hear this. Mr. Boz deserves to be heard just like everyone else.
Please thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, thank you for your courtesy in allowing us, me on behalf of the association, to come before you today. As I mentioned, the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce represents about 1,800 member businesses, employing over 300,000 workers throughout the region. We're also a founding partner of the Milwaukee 7 Regional Economic Development Corporation, and as such, we are acutely aware of the extremely competitive nature of the global marketplace and the national marketplace right now in terms of jobs and economic development. And it's in that context I come before you this morning I would ask that the committee and the county board make sure you take a very thorough look at the economic ramifications of this impact as you consider this ordinance before you. Passing an ordinance like this will necessarily make Milwaukee County a more expensive place to do business and have marketplace ramifications. We saw some of those ramifications not that long ago when the county was dealing with the Wisconsin or the Wauwatosa Innovation Park project. And before putting a countywide ordinance in place that would make the county a high-cost island on projects like these in the future, we would urge a thorough economic development analysis of the implications of such an ordinance. We appreciate the analysis, the fiscal analysis provided by Comptroller Mansky. We are concerned that that analysis deals primarily with direct impacts and does not look at some of the economic development ripple effects that that might take place with an ordinance like this in place. I think that you owe it to not only the taxpayers of the county but to the supporters of this ordinance to have that full economic development analysis done so that we can make sure that we're protecting ourselves from any unintended consequences that might be negative toward job creation and toward the creation of the sort of high-paying, family-supporting jobs that I think everybody shares a desire to create here in the county. So I would ask that the county, as it moves forward in consideration of this, do so with its eyes wide open, that if necessary, it take the time to do that kind of thorough economic development analysis as well as the straight fiscal analysis that the comptroller has provided. And so whatever decision you make, you can go into it with full confidence that you have a grasp on what the near and far term economic impacts in terms of jobs, in terms of wages, and in terms of the growth of and the fiscal health of this county will be. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss this issue. I also want to thank you and the county for its continued partnership with the Milwaukee 7, with the MMAC, and making this region a great place to live, work, and play. So thank you once again for your courtesy here today.
Supervisor Lipscomb?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Just so I understand the position of MMAC on this, is your opposition to the specific proposal, or would you oppose any wage floor?
So I think at this point we have traditionally had a concern of anything that makes a local, a municipal government, a high-cost island. We believe that these things are better dealt with in uniform fashion. To this specific ordinance, right now we think that there has been insufficient analysis of the economic development ripple effects done on this at this time. We would like to see more of that that analysis in terms of what the actual impacts in terms of economic development would be before the county move forward on this. That's where we are in this specific ordinance right now. Traditionally, we have had we've had grave concerns about ordinances that make one municipality a higher cost place to do business. We don't think that fosters a vibrant regional economy. But our specific concerns on this ordinance right now is that we believe the committee and the county board doesn't have sufficient information to look at the overall economic development impacts at this time.
In relation to development, the impact would only be on those projects receiving $1 million or more in public assistance. I mean, mm-hmm. do you? I've never heard concerns in the past when, there's mention of Innovation Park. I mean, the extent to which that project received public assistance, $13 million in tax increment financing to build out the site, $13 million in financing that this county provided to UWM to purchase the site. And yet, you know, we subsidized parking, we subsidized preservation of the butterflies, we subsidized preservation of historic buildings, but somehow the one thing we can't afford to pay for is a living wage.
And Supervisor, I'll extract a question out of that. I think it is certainly in your purview to decide whether or not you want to participate in those sort of economic development subsidies. You don't have to do that. And I think that within the context of this ordinance, I think you need a deeper look to see what the relative costs and benefits of those things. If a ramification of this ordinance is that a development doesn't happen here, you may decide that the cost-benefit and that trade-off is worth it for the sake of the goal of this ordinance. But that's something that we don't have an analysis of here before us yet. And I think it's something that the county should consider.
Okay, so in the example I gave, I actually did vote against those things. But in the hypothetical examples that we're talking about, the developments that we're supposedly going to chase away, the developer has the ability to simply pay market value and then not be subject to the living wage ordinance. So that's a market approach. I mean,
right.
What you're saying is that they shouldn't be subject to any community requirements, even though they're asking for public subsidy. So would you not require the same analysis of them to receive a subsidy that you're suggesting should be given for this ordinance?
Yeah, I guess what I would suggest is that you have the information about whether those market decisions are likely to be made in the new context of this wage. You have no analysis yet on the impact this analysis might have on those decisions. You're right. A developer could choose to do that all with their own money with no county assistance. They could also decide that without county assistance, the numbers don't work and that's a project they're not going to do. Again, you may think that's good. You may vote one way. Others might vote that. But we should know going in how many of those sort of projects we put at risk. Are we willing to put an expansion of Boeing down by the airport at risk because of this, and would this ordinance put at risk? We have no analysis breaking down into that. Would the couture happen if this was in place? We have no analysis on it. I think the county, the committee, and the county board owes it to itself to have that sort of analysis done so that we don't find ourselves with buyer's remorse down the road, finding ourselves as a black hole for development because we've created an environment that makes other areas in our own region more cost-effective for that development to happen.
Supervisor Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Voss, I've been a supervisor for 13 years. I grew up in this county. I came here when I was 8 years old. And with respect to the living wage standard here in the city of Milwaukee, it is $9.29 that was passed in 1995. We, as a county government, at least some of us as county officials, elected officials who have constituents, think that it is important and it is imprudent to make sure that those people who work on jobs that are associated with Milwaukee County have a decent wage so they do not have to go to public assistance in order to get health care, so they do not have to go to public assistance in order to get food for their families. Some of us think it's very prudent to do, or at least consider what we're doing, what's happening in front of us. Now, with respect to economic analysis, that is something that we want. As you've indicated, we have the fiscal note from the controller. And if developers decide that they want to go elsewhere because projects associated with Milwaukee County are just too expensive, well, nobody is going up to them and telling them, fortunately, we don't live in that type of country where they are forced to do whatever we want them to do. And given that, if this living wage ordinance, if it is passed, will make the lower end individuals who are paid in housekeeping, janitorial services, food services, they need that living wage to lift up their families. If they have that money, as it was said before, that money would be spent here. I don't see where there's going to be a caravan of people going to Chicago, Illinois, when the needs are to be met here. So I appreciate the sentiment with respect to the need for an economic analysis. But on the other hand, we have, and this fiscal report has been in the making for weeks. A number of sources were contacted, a number of departments were contacted, and so I think we have enough information in order to make a decision. But with respect to your representing your 1,800 businesses and which employ 300,000 persons, we want to give those people who are employed now and those people who are employed in the future the opportunity to care for their families financially. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything further for Mr. Boss? Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Boss.
Good morning.
Question. So would you say that living wage imposed at the city has created a black hole in economic development?
I think anywhere you create a higher cost environment, it causes challenges and causes trade-offs. Can I point to a specific project where a specific developer said, I'm not going in the city because of their living wage? Not equipped to do that right here, but I think we have anecdotes of undeveloped areas in the city of Milwaukee that the burden of cost and regulatory constraints within the city have had an impact on the decision-making process. And again, that's perfectly within the city's prerogative to do that. It's perfectly within your prerogative as supervisors to decide to do that on the county level. My concern is that this ordinance you have before you has not been sufficiently vetted in terms of all the ripple effect impacts on that development. If you decide after a thorough analysis is done that the benefits of this in terms of raising wages across the board outweigh the potential risks in terms of development, That's a judgment call that you are elected to make, and it is certainly within your prerogative. But I don't think that as supervisors you are equipped with enough information right now to make that decision. And that would be my concern, is I don't want anybody passing anything and, again, having unintended consequences which make us have buyer's remorse on this decision downrange.
And another question is, do you believe that as using tax dollars that we have the right to ask for specific requirements if we're going the distance for developers? Shouldn't developers or people in the business community go the distance for us?
Well, I imagine you might hear from developers about the distance they're going for you. I think that creating jobs, creating tax base, creating opportunity, creating a more attractive place for people to live creates a benefit here. It expands the tax base. It gives more money for the county to make decisions on in terms of how it's setting its priorities. But again, I am not arguing that this is a one-way street and that you have a obligation to give development assistance or subsidies to private businesses, and you are prohibited from making decisions like this about wages. What I'm presenting to you today is that you should have thorough information before you about costs and benefits before you make that decision. And I think it, in the due diligence of looking at an ordinance like this, which definitely will have economic ramifications, due diligence requires that you take a thorough, comprehensive look at the possible economic development impacts that it would have.
Well, I'll just conclude, Mr. Chair, and say the last project that the board approved was Block 2E in the Park East, and that was the Opus development, a $60 million development sold on a piece of land for $2.5 million. And under the way this ordinance is structured, that project would have moved forward because that developer had their own financing and did not need $1 million in county subsidies to build their project. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out that this ordinance is based on the City of Madison's Living Wage Ordinance, which was passed in 1999. And Madison's doing very well now. There are properties in Madison that were vacant when I was there back in the 90s. And there are properties in Madison that were vacant when I was there in the 1990s that are about to be developed. Now, they're large vacant lands. Union Square near East Washington is one that stands out. There's going to be consideration of a hotel near the Monona Terrace that's going to happen. That's with these constraints. I respect Mr. Voss's opinion. Thank you for joining us today, sir. I do appreciate you being here. But, yeah, this ordinance is based on Madison's. Madison is doing very well with that ordinance. So just wanted to point that out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I would, and I appreciate that. Madison and Milwaukee are different. Now, if Madison, you know, Madison is doing well with its ordinance, I think you should take a look, given the differences in the communities, the differences in the demographics, the difference in their economies with the state government infrastructure there, the university infrastructure there. Are there differences between the communities that might create differences in economic impact of these ordinances? Perhaps if you do a thorough analysis, you'll see that it won't. And again, that the cost, the risk would be worth the reward of an ordinance like this. Right now, I don't believe you have sufficient information before you to make that comparative analysis.
We understand your point. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If there are no other questions of Mr. Baez, thank you.
Thank you once again.
We have Christine Newman-Ortiz, 4029 North Larkin Street, followed by Joseph Elwanger.
Good morning. I'm here representing Voces de la Frontera, which represents, it's a Southside, predominantly Southside-based organization and predominantly represents low-wage working-class families in Milwaukee. And I just want to say that personally as a taxpayer and for our members that are taxpayers too, we do have buyer's remorse. We have buyer's remorse in that we have, at all levels of government, really, have, as Dr. Rosen mentioned earlier at the press conference, have been living under 30 years of a corporate welfare system where there is not enough accountability, not enough transparency, and poverty is only following down that path. Things are only getting worse. When we talk about building an attractive city, I remember when I came to this city, would have been in 1998, and at that point we were the 11th poorest city in the country, and now we're the 4th poorest city in the country. And all of the paths that we're doing are leading us. I know young people are leaving this city, and that's not just even affecting low-income families. You know, I mean, if you have endemic poverty, deep levels of poverty like we have, and especially for African-American and Latino communities, which we know rank in some of the highest in the country, it has an impact on everybody. And so we are hopeful today that you all will use your position to really steer us on a better path. Because right now we know that Congress at the national level is highly dysfunctional, and that communities, and here in our community, we really are looking to the county board to really start setting basically common sense policies. I think many of you saw the report from the that was done, and I'll just obviously from the recent example that has been highly visible in the media was the Palermo labor conflict, as many of you know, and we all received a report on that. Well, we had many workers go testify at the state legislature at a hearing like today and bring their paychecks that were part of that report to show this is how much I earn. Now, that's a company that earned $48 million, I mean, in public dollar, public subsidies, and has yet to show to the public or to those workers, did they bring people out of poverty? Did they create permanent jobs? did they give good wages? And why? Because the law doesn't require it. And so this is important for working class families. And I'll tell you, I know families that just last year alone, because they, when they got sick, and this isn't even being real sick, but just being a little bit sick, were so afraid because of the cost that it got so bad they ended up in the emergency room. And so I really, I'm extremely hopeful that you all will use the position that you have been elected to really set us on the right course and bring Milwaukee back to a city that is attractive and that is built on prosperity and quality and hope. And you're in a position to do that. Please do the right thing.
Joe Wanger.
Joseph L. Wanger, 1637 North 16th Street, and a proud constituent of Supervisor Bowens. I speak here today on behalf of the 36 congregations in MICA, congregations across the faith community spectrum, and we are in support of this living wage ordinance. There was a basic principle in the civil rights movement of the 60s, and it is still a basic principle in the justice movement of today, and that is the dignity of every human being. That, in fact, is a part of our Constitution. A part of our Constitution that we have had great difficulty living out over the years and the centuries. And today, the living wage ordinance is saying that Kevin Walker and Venus Brown are people of dignity. The work that they do has great dignity, and it's very important for all of us. This is not an ordinance that is only for those people that are low-wage people. This is an ordinance that is going to help all of us. It lifts all of us when we lift those at the edges and at the bottom. There is a very basic principle that we need to recognize. Unfortunately, it's assumed that people at the middle and the upper edges of the wage scale can have their wages go up without any question, without any problem. But people at the bottom of the wage scale have to always wait and wait and wait for even a $5 an hour raise. The reality is that the minimum wage that's paid today is about at the rate, is actually less than the rate of the minimum wage that was paid in the 60s and the 70s in terms of buying power, in terms of economic ability to support a family. And so MICA is here to say that this is the morally right thing to do. And it's the economically right thing to do. It will engage our entire community in a greater ability to function. And with 50% unemployment, male unemployment in the central city, any word about a body of elected leaders concerned about wages of those at the edges is a sign of hope that is desperately needed. Okay. For people in the central city of Milwaukee to hear that the Board of Supervisors of the Milwaukee County actually thought about people who are working, trying to find a job, and it's important to them that they give something meaningful to them and not just the promise of a by and by. This is going to give hope to our, to all of the families and to all of the people, even those who are looking for work. And so thank you, Supervisor Bowen, and all of the supervisors that apparently have come on board in support of this. And we believe that you not only are doing the right thing in moving forward this way, but you will be able to go home to your families proud that you made a change in our county that was for the good of all of us.
Supervisor Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent to be added as a co-sponsor to this.
No objection. Next, we'll have Robert Craig. This is 2525 South Shore Road. I don't know if that's your home.
That's my home.
That is your home?
Yep.
Okay. And they will be followed by Dr. Michael Rosen.
Thank you very much, everyone. I'm Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. We are a statewide organization headquartered here in Milwaukee in the Walker's Point neighborhood, and I live in the Bayview neighborhood, as Chair Cullen was pointing out. We strongly support this, and rather than speak to the supervisors, that, such as Supervisor Bowen that sponsored it, I want to address those who are uncertain, because I know not all of you have decided whether you support this or not. And look, I acknowledge there are difficulties here, that there is a way of doing business where if you use private contractors to provide public services, that they are responsible for their labor relations. And so this is not something that the that being in county government, you've always gotten involved in human resources, so to speak. But I think that things are changing dramatically, and as things evolve, we need to think about where our society is going, what our committee's challenges are, and things need to change. I actually think that this has been part of the problem, that no one has been responsible for the growth of a low-wage economy, growing inequality. And in fact, where you have a situation where 25% of jobs in the metro area are poverty-wage jobs, where people are working and they're still in poverty, with all of that means, which we've heard in this testimony. And so I think part of this is a question of you as representing the entire people of Milwaukee County, what your moral obligations are, whether you're connected to this at all. And I think that you can make a strong moral argument just as we stopped supporting child labor 100 years ago, or in the 1980s, Nelson Mandela convinced us, since he's on our mind, not to support apartheid. So there was a big argument about that, and a lot of people who are praising Nelson Mandela now did not support sanctions in the 1980s. But there was a moral evolution, so that what we had in response to his death shows this moral evolution. And so I think, quite frankly, we have, with growing economic inequality, with the extent of poverty, which hurts all prosperity, it's a huge dampening on the whole economy because we all have money to spend, that we have something where there's a moral obligation, I think, for the county and you as elected officials to take a stand with the people's money. You're spending the people of Milwaukee County's money. But aside from that, aside from what I think is we have a growing economic apartheid in this country and especially in Milwaukee, but beyond that, this is very practical. I don't want to tell you you're just taking the moral stand. Specifically, there's $38 million in extra spending power you'll create, according to the Center on Wisconsin Strategies at UW, if you do this, if you pay 8,000 workers, which is the rough estimate of how many will be affected, a living wage. And that affects the economy in a positive way, as has been pointed out, and I'm sure Dr. Rosen will point out. And so that's so there's, and in other cities, there are 140 cities with this, there's comprehensive research from the Center on American Progress that shows it has not reduced employment. Now, part of the reason for that is that the market is so distorted right now that people are being paid an artificially low wage. And also you have large multinational corporations which are taking money out of Milwaukee County who could leave more of it here with workers for the stimulating the economy. And that's not happening now because they are effective in rigging the system so they can maximize their benefit at the expense of people you represent in Milwaukee. And so we need to take a stand against that. Now, and quite frankly, there's very good research overall that the full cost of this is not on counties or cities that have done this. The research in the other 140 counties, contrary to what the controller suggests, that in fact, in a lot of places, there's been no increase in the cost of the services, that there's more than enough margin to absorb this, which again tells you that we have a rigged system where people are taking too much out and therefore, quite frankly, causing huge social and economic problems for the workers who have these jobs in Milwaukee and other areas. So this becomes, with our money, a practical thing we can do. And in fact, In Boston, they found a 30% knock-on effect. What they mean by that is that it actually impacted wages outside of county and city services when they did a living wage in Boston. So in other words, you actually start to change the private economy, which also needs to be changed in order to expand and open opportunity again in this country. Now, when Steve Boss testified, he talked about having a lot of scrutiny, needing to know more. I just want to point out that we do not have that level of scrutiny in our economic development in this city and region at all for the major projects that we pursue. In fact, the Public Policy Forum, which is a very mainline institute, has repeatedly found there is no economic strategy for this region. There is no analysis contributed that shows how many jobs will be created, for example, I don't want to pick on one area, but water technology, for example, and what their wage levels will be and what the impact will be on poverty in Milwaukee. It doesn't exist, but we've moved forward. So I don't want you to have a double standard where you say, essentially, when we talk about workers' wages, we need overwhelming proof and process, no matter what, but when we build hotels, have developments, we don't, because that's what the implication of that is. So I'm just finishing up now. So I want to say I think that there's an ethical question of you as supervisors, as elected officials, encouraging, promoting, being connected to poverty wage jobs, which is a great damaging evil that we're understanding as a society. But there's also the practical thing that you can do something about it, that you have power to do something about it as the representatives of the people of Milwaukee County. So thank you very much for taking this up. I think it's great this hearing's taking place and that we're having this discussion here. It hasn't happened in the same way in a lot of other places in this state or this country. So we have 140 ordinances, but we need a lot more than that in order to have real opportunity in this society. So I appreciate it. Sorry if it went over a little, Chairman. Thank you very much.
Next we have Michael Rosen, 3467 North Murray, followed by Dana Schultz.
Chairman Cullen, distinguished committee members, thanks for holding this hearing and moving it up. Just a week ago, President Obama told us that the defining challenge of our times was economic inequality. And you, before you today, have an opportunity to do what I would say is a very modest effort in addressing that economic equality. The simple request, which is something that has been done, as other speakers have said, in over 140 local units of government, is to require Milwaukee County not to be a poverty-level employer, to require subcontractors to Milwaukee County not to pay poverty-level wages, and to require developers who want to do business in our community and who get subsidized to over $1 million a year not to pay poverty-level wages. All of those are areas in which Milwaukee taxpayers, like myself, their dollars are being used to promote economic growth. And it's a very simple and modest request to ask that in our efforts and in our tax dollar spending, we don't put people in poverty. Now, we've heard that there hasn't been enough studies. I have studies here. These are studies from all over the country that have been done in the 140 communities that have passed the living wage. And in not one has there been an adverse effect on job creation or economic growth found. In general, what is found is that the incomes at those at the bottom of the labor market increase, that those people, because they have a very high marginal propensity to consume at 100% or even more, spend that money. According to the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, our living wage proposal, another analysis that has been done, would generate $38 million in spending in the local community. In every community, it has increased the wages of people at the bottom, and when they spend money, when aggregate demand goes up, businesses hire to provide the goods and services people want. Now, we have heard every time there is a discussion about raising the minimum wage, about providing family medical leave, about ending child labor, about passing laws that end discrimination in voting, that the sky will fall. And we have heard it from the same people over and over and over again. And yet, every time, once those laws are passed, the business communities and the business owners say, okay, we understand the rules of the marketplace now, and they get back to work. They live with it. And that will happen here. Now, I've heard concern that we would be a high-cost hole or a high-cost island. Right now, we are the fourth poorest city in the country. We are an island inside Milwaukee County, and something needs to be done about that.
Really, this is going to go much quicker. I know it's very emotional on the subject, but if we could just keep the outburst down, we'll keep moving. I'm giving people a lot more time to speak than we had anticipated. I'm letting everyone get through their thing. So I ask you to please, you know, keep
and
your...
And I am, Mr. Chairman, I am cutting my comments short, not immediately, but I am cutting them short. I do have copies of the prepared testimony, which I am not giving because of the brevity that you've requested, which I'd like somehow to get distributed to the committee members.
That'd be great.
And I also have, as I said, all of these reports and multiple copies, just so that people are aware that this thing has been studied. I might not say to death, but it has certainly been studied. Let me say one other thing. This community has pursued economic development strategy at least since the early 1980s. And that economic strategy has been to cut corporate taxes and income taxes in the state, to minimize, cut regulations in the state and in the local community, and essentially to hope that prosperity would trickle down. And for working class people in Milwaukee County, it hasn't trickled down. It's been, unless you want to talk about a tsunami of economic disparity and despair. What has happened is that we've been told, for example, and we were here, Mr. Chairman, in 1980, and we were told that if we build the Grand Avenue Mall, half of which was subsidized by taxpayer dollars, it would lead to a revival in this city. Didn't happen. In fact, we've had to bail out the Grand Avenue Mall two times. We were told that if we built the convention center, that it would lead to an economic revival and prosperity in the city. And that didn't happen either. And I could go on from Miller Park to us becoming the Silicon Valley of water, where we pour literally millions of dollars in subsidies that the MMAC requests, that it fights for. And yet what's happened is people in this community and workers in this community have gotten poorer and poorer and in more despair. This is an attempt, what I would say is a very modest attempt, backed by significant research and significant examples, benchmarking, that has taken place in 140 other communities, that we know that this works. Helps create jobs, it creates economic development. It's really time that Milwaukee County try a different strategy, one that lifts all ships, including those at the bottom. I urge you to support this ordinance now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Dana Schultz, 3615 North Humboldt, followed by Sally Springer.
That's my home address. Now you know where I live. Hey, everyone. Thank you all for having us. Thank you, Chairman Cullen. My name is Dana Schultz. I'm from northern Wisconsin, born and raised, recruited from Newman Catholic High School to play basketball at UWM. I formerly was the director of 9to5, who's been a major part of this coalition. I now work for a group called Wisconsin
Voices. We're a network of 94 organizations around the state fighting to strengthen our democracy, so I'm excited to be participating very fully in democracy today. A study done in 2010 from the Institute of Women's Policy Research in Milwaukee County has found that women are more employed than men in Milwaukee County, but deeper in poverty. I just want to say that one more time. Women are employed at higher numbers, but deeper in poverty. Now, I don't think it's okay that men aren't employed at higher numbers, but the fact is people who are working more shouldn't be paid less. And that is the reality that we're grappling with today. Food service workers and home care workers, to name a few, are some of the folks that are directly impacted by your vote. And most of them are women. Most of them have the responsibility to care for their families, to care for themselves. Their wages are their dignity. Their wages are the responsibility to care for their family. Those two are interrelated at a deep level. And as folks pointed out today, this decision, you don't need to be a priest or a nun that taught me in high school to know that this is a moral issue. The Pope has been talking quite a bit about the Catholics teaching around living wages, but it's not just this Pope, it's many, many other popes. And one of my favorite, Pope John XXIII, has said, wages should not be determined by a marketplace nor left to the more powerful. They should be determined in accordance with justice and equality, which means that workers must be paid a wage which allows them to live a truly human life and fulfill their family obligations in a worthy manner. Amen. That's what we're talking about today. And on a personal note, I'm going to share this because my boyfriend's not here and he's probably not watching. But, you know, as a young woman thinking about, you know, where to have your family and what to do, making decisions about a family, you think about what are the opportunities in the place that you live. And how does your city value the work and the people around you, your neighbors and your friends, and not just you? And for me, my boyfriend is nervous about having a child in Milwaukee because of the opportunity or lack thereof that we see. So this is a moral decision, but it's also a decision about what kind of opportunities we should have for everybody and not just a select few. So again, I want to thank you. I don't pretend to speak on behalf of all women, but let me tell you that the women of in home care and food service, they're working really hard and they deserve the right to care for their family. So this is a vote. It's a right and wrong. And it's a vote about opportunity for our families to strengthen in Milwaukee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from Sally Springer, 7425 Harwood Avenue, speaking against, followed by Peter Abbott.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak today. I'm going to read this because I tend to speak very fast. Okay. As friends and a staunch supporter of Family Care Program and a contractor for Milwaukee County Department of Family Care, I'd like to make the Board of Supervisors aware of the potential impact of the ordinance will have on the supportive home care options, my company, its approximately 1,200 SEIU represented employees and 1,200 Milwaukee County residents. SHO was formed back in 1997 to provide personal and supportive home care services to the members of the Milwaukee County Family Care Program and has always had an exclusive contract with Milwaukee County. Under this contract, the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care pays all its wages, payroll taxes, and benefits, including workers' compensation, travel allowance, 1 week of paid time off, and numerous bonuses for employees providing the supportive and personal care services. Unlike any other health care service who bills directly for hourly or visit rates to Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance companies, this contractual pass-through provides Milwaukee County Family Care a unique visibility and control of the direct costs of the personal and supportive home care services. SHO is contractually responsible for managing all the administrative functions, including human resources, payroll, scheduling, meeting the family care quality assurance requirements, training, care coordination, supervisory visits, protective medical supplies, yearly TB tests, 24 hours on call, and more. SHO is compensated a capitative rate for these management functions. In accepting the capitative rates, SHO shares the risk of providing care in the most cost-effective way to the family care program. The cost of these functions and our acceptance acceptance of the risk keeps SHO mostly at a break-even business with small margins and low administrative costs. SHO's capitative rate is approximately $1.15 per hour. Indeed, also SHO has not had a rate increase in over 6 years for the management fees, while the employees have had several wage increases over the past few years. On an average SHO employee receives $10.45 an hour. Benefits and taxes that include another 21% of the actual cost brings it to $12.64 an hour. Then adding in the management fee of $1.15 an hour, MCDA currently pays about $13.80 per hour at the current rate. Because these costs are paid by Milwaukee County Department of Family Care, The most direct impact of this ordinance would be to substantially increase the cost of the family care program to the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care. This endangers this program, especially since its proposed ordinance includes automatic and escalating annual wage increases over the next several years and beyond. SHO employees deliver over 1 million hours of care to Milwaukee County Family Care members, and by members every year, so seemingly small changes to wages have large impacts on budgets. Should this ordinance be enacted requiring the contractor to absorb any of these costs, SHO would cease to exist, leaving the majority of our 1,200 employees without employment and the 1,200 members in Milwaukee County without the bulk of their supportive services, since most insurance companies, Medicare and Medicaid, do not reimburse for supportive home care services. They only reimburse for the personal cares. Furthermore, about 80% of these services, both provided by SHO and the other exclusive contract currently is New Health Services by MCFI, we have approximately 80% of these workers that provide the care are family members. Most other health care providers do not employ family care members. MCDA, through SHO and other contract agencies, help provide basically needed entry-level Milwaukee County jobs. Providing personal and supportive home care services does not require trained or highly educated employees, but dedicated ones. Workers are not required to become a certified nursing assistant, but they are only required to complete a 40-hour PCW training program. Of the 1,200 employees that SHO employs, only about 10% of them work more than 30 hours per week. This is a second job to most SHO employees and not their primary means of support. Okay. A couple of things I'd like to address is that nothing has been determined what the financial impact of the Affordable Health Care Act will have on this business. And to determine that, we don't know. It could be substantial. And right now, there is no health care insurance provided by the SHO employees, because most of them do not meet one of the reasons is most of them, there's not funding for it, but you have to work 30 hours or more in today's market to be covered under insurance. A couple other things is that no county dollars are paid for and used in the family care program. That all comes from Medicaid. And an issue with Madison, compared to Madison, Madison does not have the family care program. It only has the PACE and partnership program. And the other thing that I would like to address in this ordinance is that the requirement of any contractor or subcontractor to provide a list of the names, addresses, telephone numbers, and rates that an employee receives in this ordinance is proprietary information. Currently, our contract with Family Care requires and allows and has had, we've had the Department of Audit in our facility numerous times, full access, and when wages are given, we get audited by the audit department in the family care program to when they have access to it, but to actually turn it over and make it public information would be a hard time.
Can you finish up? Are you almost done?
Yes.
Okay.
So I urge you to take the family care portion out of the living wage.
Okay. Do you have copies of your prepared remarks
yes.
that you could share with us?
Okay.
Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell us what SHOW stands for?
SHOW stands for Supportive Home Care Options. It is a contract for providing supportive home care employment services in the family care program.
And Milwaukee County Family Care is now including a larger region?
Yes, it is.
And my question is, do your services include that larger region, or is this strictly Milwaukee County?
We have chosen to be strictly in Milwaukee County.
Thank you.
And there is other ones doing the other counties.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further?
Okay.
Not. Supervisor Bowen.
Oh. Am I done?
Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming today.
Okay. Thank you.
I do have a question for you, though.
Okay.
The family care program already mentioned in past board meetings that they did plan on raising the wages for members that work in family care. Were you aware of that, and were you in opposition to that move as well?
Not at all. The wages went up to $10.27 an hour. It was retro back to January 1st, and we paid out all the bonuses, that amount of money retroed on November 30th. So I was not opposed to it. I was very pleased to see. This is the county also gave another.
I'm mentioning a new increase of a dollar for current.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't understand the question.
The family care program was already planning to move forward, raising the wages of home care workers, the same ones that you work with. Again, what I'm saying is, were you in opposition of them increasing the wages again?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you family care? The family care, Milwaukee County Department of Family Care, mm-hmm. sets the wages. And I'm very pleased to see that our employees are able to receive rate increases and bonuses. So I'm not opposed to that at all. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay.
The family care program was already planning on moving forward, giving raise increases, and this is the same thing that this proposal is doing. Another point about family care that this increase does not hurt the organization that the lady works for, but I think it's fair to point out that with the reserves that we do have. And the analysis that shows the fiscal impact, there are a lot of assumptions on how much the cost of increasing wages for those home care workers and family care. So it is estimated, and we'll get into this later, at a $5 million number, but there's no guarantee that the number will be that large. Again, there was an average of the wage, and the assumption that the decrease in the capitation rate would continue the raise in the poverty level wage would be continued. So I think we just need to make that clear for the committee and for the audience about the things that the department already planned on doing that we are moving in concurrence with.
You'll have a chance to testify, right?
And I will.
Be part of
I just wanted to be clear. She obviously is against living wage, but
no,
also
not.
Also supports raising wages. So I'm just trying to be clear.
Can I say something? I'm not against the
living
wage.
Why don't we just wait? Why don't Supervisor Romo West?
I would like to hear from the Supervisor on this, Mr. Chairman, but in addition,
she has a card here.
Okay, great.
There we go. Miss Springer, I've known Miss Springer for about 10 years through my role on the Health and Human Needs Committee. She is indeed the owner and operator of SHOW, which does stand for Supportive Healthcare Options. She was a strong proponent of the move to give benefits and sick days to her employees. And she sat down and was able to work with SEIU to come up with a way to be able to do that. So it's not indeed that she is against paying living wages and that she's not pro-employee, because I think of the supportive healthcare operators that I know of, She is one of the ones that really is pro-employee, and I can say that because my daughter did work for her for a time. However, again, I do think that there are concerns regarding family care and how this will affect family care, so I do think that it's pertinent that we do hear from Ms. Ledger in this regards, and I have had conversations with Supervisor Bowen, and I know that he understands that this is that this is a sticking point possibly for some supervisors, not saying that it is for me. However, I do believe that because of the amount of revenue that the family care program creates for Milwaukee County, that it is who of us to have all of the information before making this decision. And so, again, I'm not defending Ms. Springer or her position on this particular item. I just want to let people know that in the past she has been very supportive. And if there is a way to work with these providers in order to make this happen, I know that Ms. Springer is one of those providers that's more than willing to have that dialogue and find solutions. Thank you. In fact, for the record, there would not be a family care program in Milwaukee County if it was not for Ms. Springer, and I can say that with 110% certainty. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Ledger, you have a card. We're going to wait to hear from you. We want to hear from the public, and we'll get to you.
Okay. I wasn't trying to skip. I was just going to clarify a question for Supervisor Bowen, but I can wait.
You got a quick answer for this question?
Okay. When you refer to the proposed increase, your reference was the same that Ms. Springer was talking about. You were talking about the same occurrence, which we processed those checks at the end of November. So I just wanted to make sure that you understood that the wage increase that we have been discussing is the one that she referenced.
Okay. Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Peter Abbott, 855 North 60th, representing Grassroots TOSA, followed by Sandy Zellmer, 2472 North 65th Street.
Hi, my name is Peter Abbott, as Representative Cullen mentioned. The reason I'm here is I think it's important that we understand that, and it's difficult for me because the previous speakers have said a lot of the things I wanted to say, so I'll keep this about Wauwatosa as well. The business community is an important part of Wauwatosa. It's part of what attracted me to move there 15 years ago. And our local businesses, our locally owned businesses, need customers. And a living wage will help them get those customers. I wanted to save our business community around 68th and Wells and leading down to State Street. I also want to tell you about the difference in quality of the kind of businesses that pay poverty wages versus those that pay a decent wage. We have two supermarkets next to each other, Pick and Save and Metcalf Century. And Pick and Save pays very low wages. There is a constant turnover of workers there. They don't know where things are. And even though I may pay a few pennies more at Century, I go there because workers there have been there a long time. They're not looking for an escape because they get paid decent wages. They know where things are. They're very polite and courteous. They seem even sometimes happy to work there. There's a big difference between good paying jobs and the quality of work that's produced at the poverty level. And especially in terms of turnover, it's really not a good practice to pay people so low that you have to constantly hire new people just to retrain them and then see them go and start all over again. The representative of the Milwaukee Area Chamber of Commerce talked about how you need to study this more in terms of the impact of what these higher wages would be. Well, I think you need to look at what the impact of lower wages is. Lower wages create slums. Lower wages means that there's has a detrimental impact on the business community, on the quality of life of our city. I am not just a taxpayer, I'm a citizen, and I want to live in a community where everyone thrives. And a low-wage economy, which is what we're moving towards, where more and more jobs are in the service sector, which is the lowest-paying section of the sector of the economy, is bad for the economy, is bad for everyone, because you need businesses are not going to produce products for people who can't afford them. So they're sitting on, actually the private sector, the biggest companies are sitting on hoards of cash because they're not investing in productive capacity because they're not going to produce goods for people who can't afford them, who are paid too little to buy anything. And second of all, a lot of people, I've heard supervisors and other political people and pundits talk about how this would raise our taxes. The fact is, I don't just pay county taxes. I pay state and federal taxes. And what people who are paid poverty wages are getting public assistance, which my taxes also pay for. So if you're just moving my tax bill from the county side to the federal side and the state side for utility assistance and rent assistance and food assistance and Medicaid, you're just, as some politicians call it, shifting the shaft. And that doesn't help us at all. You want to help, don't help us that way. And you have a choice here. If you vote not to support a living wage, you are, in fact, voting to keep people in poverty. And people who work full-time should not have to be paid to do full-time work just to stay in poverty. Full-time work should be able to pay to support a family and to support the economy secondarily. But you also need full-time jobs to be an incentive to work. It used to be said that welfare was bad because it took away the incentive to work. Well, poverty wage jobs, and we're talking about near the minimum wage of $7.25, $8 an hour. The poverty line for a family of four is a little over $11 an hour. And the highest wages now being paid in the categories that will be covered by this ordinance are now, I think, at about $9 an hour, which is more than $2 below the poverty line. If you vote against this ordinance, you're voting to keep people in poverty. And the difference in wages, and if you're doing that, you're also saying that the companies that are paying these low wages can take that money and move it to their home countries and cities that are outside of Wisconsin. The company that supplies the food service and other janitorial services at the county jail, for example, I believe it's called Aramark, they're located in Philadelphia. They don't buy their toner or their copiers, or their machinery here. They buy it at their home headquarters. The extra money they make by keeping wages low does not get channeled back into the Milwaukee economy. And so when you're voting to keep wages low, you're voting to send money out of the city, out of the state, and in many cases, in case of the multinational companies that hire our airport workers, you're voting to send them out of the country as well. So you're not doing Milwaukee economy any favors by keeping wages low. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Sandy Zellmer, followed by Rosalind Wolf. Before you speak, I spoke to Supervisor Johnson, and I've had some requests from people, staff and others, that this area is normally reserved for staff, and so if you guys can sort of move the sign back and you guys can move back, that'd be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank the chair and the entire Milwaukee County Board for having this public hearing on the proposed Milwaukee County Living Wage Ordinance. This is so important for Milwaukee County and that its impact will be felt for years into the future. I'm Sandy Zellmer. I'm a constituent of County Supervisor David Collins. My husband and I have lived in Milwaukee County 40 years. We've lived in Wauwatosa 37 years. I'm here during this busy holiday time as I felt there was an urgent need to support the proposed Milwaukee County Living Wage Ordinance. I'm here both as an individual and also representing Grassroots TOSA, which I am a steering committee member. I'm very concerned about what's going on in our society, nationally and locally. To me, this is a first step in the right direction. We all know that at this time, things are not getting done nationally because people in power are not willing to work together and each compromise for the good of the country, the people. So we have another choice. We can sit back and do nothing, or we can get it done locally. Other states and communities have gotten it done locally. You've heard 140 communities. It's been successful in these areas. There have been no negative impacts from the passage of any living wage ordinance in any other locality. You know for a fact that some people that spoke today, if there had been evidence, they would have brought it up. They didn't. In fact, if anything, it positively improves the economy. And to be told otherwise are scare tactics to mislead people. I know for at least 3 months now, actually a little longer than that, certain groups and county board members have worked very hard to try to get this done. They've been willing to sit down and trust and listen to any concerns, come to some compromises, and bring forth a very worthwhile ordinance. I'm very concerned about our country, our state, our county. What kind of society are we becoming with this reverse Robin Hood approach in our government at all levels? Take from the poor and the middle class over and over and give more and more to the rich and the corporations. How is this acceptable to anyone? What kind of an example is this for our children? What is it doing to our middle class? What is it doing to our economy? What is it doing to the youth that are just going into the workforce? I have made contact with hundreds of people in Wauwatosa in regard to living wage. A number of people actually said to me, well, of course, Milwaukee County board members would support this. We collected over 1,000 signatures in Wauwatosa in about a 3-week time frame. People did not hesitate to sign. I know that certain board members have also received numerous calls in support of this ordinance. In fact, some of you received more calls in support of living wage than for the budget. I think this speaks for itself. We have a moral obligation to stand up for what is right. I don't think there's any question that anyone supportive of social justice should be supporting this ordinance. I want to thank you for your time and consideration. I hope the day is coming for social justice. It's about time. This time of year, wouldn't it be appropriate? I urge you to vote yes on the living wage ordinance.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Rosalind Wolf, 2724 West Oriole, followed by Ken Kramer.
Good morning. My name is Rosalind Wolf. I'm with the League of Young Voters Education Fund. We represent young people of color, and one of our biggest obstacles working with people that we work with is poverty. So let me be clear that this ordinance is not at all about a dollar amount, nor is it about putting extra change in your pocket. But in a real sense, it is about poverty. It's about addressing our education system via poverty. It's about curbing crime in our community via poverty. It's about addressing the real disease that plagues our community of hopelessness via poverty. And the time to do that is now. We as the League of Young Voters, we believe we should work hard. And we encourage our people to work harder than what they're already working in order to make things better. But it is unfair and it is unjust to ask people to work harder to make corporations millions of dollars when the only reward you get is to have to go home and know you can't provide a stable home for your children. We use the airport all the time, some of us more than others. I myself have a special needs nephew who has a home care worker, and some of us in here, if we live long enough, just might need a home health care worker. They work to make our lives better. We have a duty to make sure that they can live just as well as we live. And the time to do that is now. It's a disgrace, and it will be a disgrace for this committee and the board, to let a tangible opportunity pass to address the issue of poverty. And I will say it, we said it for years, and I'll say it again, we are the ones we have been waiting for.
Right.
The time is now. So we're asking you not to vote yes to put more money in our pockets, but we're asking you to vote yes for against poverty. We're asking you to vote yes for our education system. We're asking you to vote yes to curb crime. You need to vote yes for the living wage ordinance and begin to really affect change and cure poverty in our communities. Thank you.
Next we have Ken Kramer. Is he in the room?
Ken Kramer's here. He's in the hallway.
We'll go to the next person so we can let Mr. Kramer know that he'll be up next. We'll go to Lanice Vickers, 3211 North 24th Place, from 9 to 5.
Hi. I'm a organizer with 9 to 5, so I'm here to represent 9 to 5 as well as all of these workers and my children as well. At first, I didn't want to speak, but I am for the living wage ordinance. I wanted to come up and speak after the representative from the MMAC spoke because I just wanted to make sure that you have, you know, different understandings from different folks here about businesses that may leave because if you enforce this living wage ordinance. And I just want to tell you what I value. I value God, family, and work in that order. And my work is spread not just the work I do at 9 to 5, but my work I do as a mother, work I do in the community, the work I do in my church. And there's a story from long ago when you talk about analysis and you heard different ones, but I'm going to give you a different analysis, a story that happened over 2,000 years ago when there was a man named Jesus who spoke to over 5,000 people. And when his disciples told him that you need to send these people away because we cannot feed them, that it will take 8 months of wages, and that still would not be enough to feed these 5,000. And it's not just people, it was 5,000 men. So we're not even talking about the women and children were there. But with just a little faith, and what he told his disciples was, go to that boy and see what he had. And he had 2 fishes and 5 loaves. And with that, he fed the 5,000 plus. And in return, he told them to go pick up what was left, which he received 5 baskets in return. And so what I say to you is that these employers that employ these employees that will be affected by this, they will not lose. But if you pay them just a little bit more, because that's all it is, if they're making an average $9.50 or so what is it to increase it to a livable wage? Just imagine what they would reap in return. They would receive a huge amount in return. And like the woman said, when we were knocking on doors and making calls, I spoke to a young lady who told me that she can't even afford to shop where she worked. And that's not right. That shouldn't make sense. If we're able to work in these places of business, we should be able to shop in these places of business. Some of these workers barely make enough to provide their needs. They should be able to make enough to provide their wants. I listened to the gentleman that came up first from the Milwaukee Public Museum, and I think it's wonderful that we're able to go in on a Monday if we live in a area with our ID. But wouldn't it be nice if you could take your kids there on a Saturday? If some of these workers, if all these workers were making livable, decent wages, they could take their family to the museum to, you know, see our historical sites, right? We shouldn't have to wait till the schools offer it or wait till it's free to get in, but go on a day that, you know, everyone can enjoy it. And so I just want to say that to you, that the more you put out, the more they'll receive in return. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mr. Kramer back in the room, or is he here, or see anyone responding to that?
He's here.
You coming?
He's coming. We can move on to the next
okay.
one. By that time, he should be here.
Okay, we have G.A. Ruitt, if I'm mispronouncing that. 1110 Antique Lane, Northbrook, Illinois, speaking in favor.
What?
Is this person here? Nope. Okay, we'll move on. Next person, Melody Evans Haley, 8558 West Appleton, apartment 4, speaking in favor.
Hello, everyone. You know my name, Melody. I'm a CNA at New Health Services. I'm also a union member with SEIU Healthcare Wisconsin. I help organize at CHO before they even had a union. It was not welcomed by Ms. Springer, but it was voted in by the workers. Okay, and that was just recent in the past few years, so it ain't been a long, long time. I have 5 clients. 4 of them is at New Health Services. My other client is with Interfaith. 2 of them just died, unfortunately. You begin to feel like a slave to your employer because Interfaith only pays you $8.30 an hour for a CNA. New Health Services pay you $9.50 an hour. You can't. We shouldn't feel like we slaves to our employers. You shouldn't have to get 5 and 6 and 7 clients just to make ends meet. Every 2 weeks, I bring home $639 in change. My rent is $730 a month. So for 2 weeks, that whole check goes to my rent plus the next check. I have to take money out. You shouldn't have to juggle food and bills to get your high blood pressure pills and your acid reflux pills for $70 a month. You got to go out, you got to be without medication so you can eat. Or you got to do without food so you can get your medication. You shouldn't have to juggle. This is America. This is America. It's more than enough money and resources down here. When God blessed us all, He blessed us with more than enough. People need to open up their hand and share the wealth. Freely you give, freely you receive. A lot of us is not dumb or stupid being a caregiver. We're educated people. We love to care for other human beings. That's why we do it. It ain't about the money because you ain't getting enough money with this kind of job. And I come from a working class family. My father built cars at American Motors. For 38 years it became Chrysler Motors. My mother worked at Pabst. And then she, when that buckled under, went out of business, then she had to start cleaning for the courthouse in Waukesha and the fire department there. So we come from working class people. All we know how to do is work, work, work. We're workaholics. But enough is enough. You need to start blessing the people because if we have more, we can give more. And caregivers is the biggest givers. We out of the little we get, when we go into people's home and take care of them, a lot of them don't have much. These are old people that lost a lot because they was in institutions like nursing homes, and then they, after they became better, they came back home and they didn't have anything because they lost everything. And so you see them in need when they need towels, and their towels are so thin that you could see through them. Those are, you know, cleaning rags now, and they're still using this. This is their golden years, for Christ's sake. And they should have the best. These are human beings. They deserve the best. We give them the best care, even though we get the least pay. And it's not fair to nobody. And those people are thankful to us for coming in, taking care of them, good care of them, because they don't have nobody else. A lot of them, their relatives have died off, and we're the only family that they got. And our job our company that we work for tell us not to get attached. How can you not get attached to a human being that you see every day of your life? How could you not get attached? They become your second family. And you bless them. You sacrifice and get them towels. And you put them on layaway. You have to put their stuff on layaway. Get them towels and sheet sets. Or go to the Goodwill and try to find the best for less. But by any means necessary, we scrape up and be a blessing to these people. Because so oftentimes, the only hug they get all day is from us. That's the only love that they get. And all of us need love. That's what Mandela was all about, is love and kindness, peace. And that's what caregivers do. They bring peace and love and kindness. And I just thank y'all, and I wish y'all would vote yes for this. Because we shouldn't have to have lack. It's more than enough resources out here. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Primatino Torres. And then if Mr. Kramer's come back in the room, we'll give him one more shot. Mr. Torres?
Gone.
Walter Guerin?
He's gone, too.
Gone. Peter Rickman? You're still here.
I'm going to talk as quickly as possible and keep my remarks as brief as possible, although many people in this room think that that would be a miracle in and of itself. I do have copies of what I prepared to share with folks. I know I've had a chance to speak with some of you. I get laughed at because I carry my papers around, my binder clips, but there is a reason that I have all this. It's because there's so darn much evidence in favor of living wage laws. And so many of you have heard about some incredibly moving stories from people today that I'm not going to try to repeat that. There's no way I can try to share with you all the evidence. I want to focus on one particular thing. It's going to be really narrow. And unfortunately, Supervisor Haas stole a little bit of my thunder here, looking at the comparisons between Milwaukee and the city of Madison. As Supervisor Haas noted, about 14 and a half years ago, that city passed a living wage law virtually identical to the one being considered here in Milwaukee County. There are, however, a couple of distinctions, and I'd like to highlight this. First of all, in Milwaukee, the proposed ordinance would attach to development subsidies. In Madison, also attaches to development subsidies. One of the distinctions, though, between the two ordinances is that in Milwaukee, we're talking about $1 million or more in subsidy. Somehow in Madison, they've been able to continue to grow their economy and go forward with tremendous amounts of city-supported development with only $100,000 threshold. That's right. It's about a tenth of what's being proposed here. Somehow they can manage their development scene with more stringent requirements than what we're talking about. Also in Madison, they have a wage requirement of $12.45 an hour, just as is being proposed here. In Madison, they require that the development subsidy In Madison, they require that those companies that benefit from development subsidies that are subcontractors or what is termed in their law successors, assignees, and transferees, for those who aren't lawyers, the people who end up employing folks on the site of development subsidies like the actual hotel or the actual grocery store, those folks are required to pay the same living wage, just like is being proposed here. Again, somehow Madison's development scene has been able to not just survive but thrive. In Milwaukee, we're proposing 1 year for every $100,000 that these living wage requirements apply to development projects. In Madison, those requirements attach in perpetuity. Again, somehow they've been able to not just survive but thrive. I'd like to point out a couple particular examples, though, in Madison. And as I'm sure many of you on the committee know, in cities, there are further development tools available than what counties have available. And unfortunately, in the comptroller's report, they said, you know, Milwaukee County's role may become negligible in economic development. We know that's not true, but one of the points here is that Madison had far more to lose than what Milwaukee County does in terms of talking about development. Yet they were willing to go forward, and since they went forward 14 years ago, they've seen tremendous success in city-involved development projects. As Supervisor Haas again noted previously, There are developments up and down some of the most important parts of that city. And for those who aren't familiar, I won't rely on just reference points, but I'll give you as much in the way of facts as possible. The Union Quarters development, city land sale, tax increment finance support, $50 to $75 million project. It's going forward with living wage requirements attached to it. You go a little bit further down East Wash towards the Capitol. There's something called the Constellation. It's the large building that you now see on Madison's skyline. A few hundred million dollars of a project there. City land sale, tax increment finance subsidy, went forward with living wage requirements. You step across the street to 800 East Washington. There is a proposed development that's going forward. They're just inking the final details. $800 million worth of development. City land sale, tax increment finance, going forward with living wage requirements. You jump across the square to the Monona Terrace area. There's a hotel going in there. There's a fierce bidding war. The only question is which recipient is going to get this. They want so badly to get in on this that they're willing to do living wage requirements and more. There's going to be a $350 to $500 million project going in. City land sale, tax increment finance subsidy from the city, living wage requirements in place. Madison, not just surviving, thriving. I'm going to finish up here just with a couple things really quickly. I'm happy to go into much more detail on this, as many of you know. I got stacks. I got paper clips. I got more in boxes. There's a couple things that were noted in the Comptroller's report that I do want to raise up. There was a study reference that I think is clearly erroneous and not something that should be part of this discussion here. One, that study referencing land use restrictions potentially decreasing the value of development projects by almost a quarter simply is inapplicable to this discussion. One, that study was released in 1991. Those of you who are familiar with the history of the living wage movement know that the first living wage law was passed 3 years later. Most weren't even put into place until 10 years later. How is this study applicable when it predates what we're even talking about? Second, that study references historic preservation districts. That's a land use restriction on what may go forward, not how it may proceed, what may go forward. That study's inapplicable, again, to the consideration here. Excuse me. The distinction between living wage ordinances, which is about qualitative differences or how things may go forward versus what may go forward, is instructive. But here's one of the most important reasons why. That study referenced the entirety of a market, a development market. Those who are development professionals understand that development is all about the real estate. It's place-based. They're talking about the Chicago Historic District. What we're talking about here are some very particular parcels of land. One, downtown transit center, directly abuts the most valuable commercial property market in the entire state. Certainly in the region, definitely in the entire state. It overlooks Lake Michigan. That's the most developable piece of property in Wisconsin. And living wage restrictions, so to speak, are not going to limit what happens there. You look at the Park East. First of all, the Park East Redevelopment Compact applies to everything, so Mr. Bass's comments they're a mystery why they were included, because any development that may or may not have been held up there deals with an entirely different set of standards here. We're talking, again, about $1 million or more in subsidy. I just realized, I'm sorry, I'm going on here, and again, I can continue to go forward. I guess that's my point. There's so much evidence in favor of doing living wage ordinances, and there's nothing that says you can't do this because it will have such adverse consequences. Again, more than happy to talk more about this. The only sort of motivational thing I'll leave you with is this, because I can't match what everyone else did. It's really simple. Even though I was raised Catholic, I've always been inspired by Rabbi Hillel. If we're not for ourselves, who's going to be for us here in Milwaukee County? And if not now, when?
Last call for Mr. Kramer. Is he here or not? Nope. Okay. Then we have Bruce Colburn, 3905 North Powell Avenue, speaking in favor.
Mr. Chair. What was the name on the last?
The one. Peter Rickman, 3702 South 20th.
No, no. The one that you called and
Ken
he's not
Kramer.
Here.
Ken Kramer.
And what did he register as? For or against?
Against.
Okay. Thank you.
And he has some organization that he represented. Looks like CLMC. I'm not sure what that is.
CLMC. Does administration know what that is?
Don't know.
Contract. Do you know what the organization that the individual CLAC? I don't know what that
he
is.
He was before us regarding the hotel.
Yeah.
at Innovation on Innovation Park.
I believe he was in front of us for a different organization that he represented. I've never heard of that organization, though, so I just wanted to clarify that. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Colburn.
Yes, good morning, or I guess it's good afternoon now. I wasn't going to speak. I did because there were certain issues raised around the issue of home care and family care that I think are important for us to think about. It's sort of like a tale of two cities. On the one hand, you heard people get up and testify in such a personal way. It brought a tear to my eye, I'm sure some of you, to listen to how people who are actually working on money that the government supplies are living in abject poverty and the effect it has on their children and their families. It's something that it's hard even to live, it's hard to listen to, it's hard even to live to understand how people have to live like this. And then at the same time, for many of us in this room, at some point or other, we're going to use home care. That's a fact of life. It's personal for many of you. I've talked to a number of supervisors whose families use home care, and they know about the importance of the job. At the same time, we hear from one of the agencies, and they raise, I'm sure, some legitimate concerns about funding issues and other things. And I could spend time talking about some of the things that were said about why there's so many part-time workers, how most people, very small number, get any benefits at all, about the raise that came through, the limits, and how few people actually got the raise. Or we could talk about sources of money and management fees that go along with per capita rates. But that's not really the issue. The issue, we came here to lift people up, not to fight with each other. And so I think the question that really is before us, if you think about Milwaukee, the fastest growing job in this city, in this state, in this country, are home care jobs.
That's right.
The fastest growing. If we don't figure out this problem and how to make those into family supporting or at least livable jobs, what are we doing here?
Right.
And so as we think about it, one thing is that we've had experience with that. We've had janitors in the downtown area who didn't make, were all part-time, had no benefits. We figured out a way to work with management to make those into full-time jobs with benefits so people can support their families and have a level of health care. And so I think really the question here is that we can figure this out. The living wage doesn't end when you all pass it.
That's right.
This is something that we're going to have to work on because we're changing the way that people operate. But we have to have the chance to be able to do that. We can work with the agency, with the county, with our union, with others who are interested in family care to make these into livable jobs. And that's really what this is about, lifting people up. Give us the chance to lift people up. That's a noble thing. That's what government is about. That's why you all got involved in this. So I just ask you for that chance. Vote for this. We can make this work just like we made other things work, and it's worked across the country. Thank you very much.
That's all the cards from members of the public who wish to speak. We do have that stack over there that registered. Presumably most are in favor. And so we do have some people from the administration, but I think we're going to take a short break right now so people can use the restroom, and we'll come back at maybe about 1:25, 1:30, and we'll continue when we have some members of the staff that wish to speak, and Supervisor Bowen and the comptroller. So we'll be in recess till 1:30.